Pleased to have Sam Copeland, the Mayor of Armidale Regional Council, here with me this morning. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be back after a bit of a hiatus.
Yes, that's right. It's been a very busy time for everybody, I think, and no doubt about that. And now we're here to talk about the council, obviously, and there's been quite a bit going on in the intervening period since I last talked to you. What do you see as the priority issues that are taking up quite a bit of your time as the mayor and the time for the council members?
The main thing that we're going through at the moment is the consultation around the special rate variation or the rate adjustment. So that's been a big thing. The other one is, and it ebbs and flows and will for the next number of years, is the renewable energy zone, what that means as well. So maybe if I just come back to the rate adjustment or the rate rise.
Mm. Well, I think that's the one that's going to be occupying a lot of people's interest.
Yeah, it is.
A significant change proposed.
It is a significant change, and I'd really encourage all of your listeners to become as informed as possible about that, because there's no doubt that a 50% rate rise sounds horrific. But you need to see what it actually means. So I'll lead up to it in a moment, but we're going through a period now, and we started last or 2 weeks ago actually, just with some reference groups, community reference groups and business reference groups, to talk to them about it, get their understanding, what it means, etc. etc. We now have some community forums. There'll be one at Armidale Town Hall on the 13th of September at 6 p.m, Gyra Bowling Club the 14th of September at 6 p.m, and Wallamumbi Hall at 6 p.m. on the 15th of September. And this is a real opportunity for the community to come along. We'll present the why and what it means, and also just be on hand to answer any questions. Mm. There's plenty of information on the council website. If you go to Your Say on the Armidale website, there's plenty there as well. The important thing to realise is that it applies to land only, not just the not the service charges underneath. So I got my rate bill a few weeks ago, and don't mind sharing with you. I don't live that salubriously. I think my total rates notice for the 12-month period was $1,900, of which $900 was the land component. So the rate increase only applies to the $900 of land, and a 50%. It's going to be introduced over 3 years. So it means that next year I will pay $150 more. The year after I'll pay $300 more. Mm. And then in year three, I'll pay $450 more.
And then I understand the rate variation stops after the third year. Is that right?
No, it'll become permanent. So my land component will likely go from $900 up to $1,350. Now, the other thing, and this has really become apparent the more you delve into it, it's almost as though councils, and regional councils in particular, are structurally set up to fail. So
I've heard that put in a few areas.
So structurally set up to fail. So this is what the important thing is. When we talk about the 50%, we're not saying that everybody's rates will go up by 50%. We're asking for the total rate revenue to increase by 50%. So we are only allowed to collect a certain dollar amount of revenue.
Mm.
In rates, and currently that's just a sniff under $20 million. We're asking the state government, or IPART, will make the determination, the Independent Pricing and Regulatory Tribunal will make the determination, can that grow to $30 million?
Mm.
Now, if our population increases, then the actual burden will be lessened for each individual ratepayer.
Mm.
So it doesn't mean that everything's open-ended. All we're asking is for the total amount of rates that we can collect to expand.
Mm.
We can grow our population, which will ease the burden on individuals. The other question that comes through is, and certainly from the rural landholders who have seen significant increase in the value of their land, they've said, look, the value of our land's increased, therefore you're getting more money. We're not. We are capped as to how much revenue we can collect in terms of rates. So it just means that ad valorem percentage has to go down if the land value's gone up. It's crazy. So I guess probably just to circle back to, you know, personally, my rates will increase by $450. Now, I don't live as salubrously as some, so that's why my rates are low. But, you know, for me, that's not a hell of a lot of money, and I'd really encourage everybody to, you know, take a rational look at what it means. Look at your rates notice. Look at the top two figures, which are the land components, and that's what it's going to increase by. Now, there is no doubt, and I'm not trying to be flippant about it, there is no doubt that for some people that is going to represent hardship.
And I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, and we do have hardship policies in place. So, you know, we're not tone deaf to that extent, but nor do I want people just to carry on with hyperbole.
Getting on to that hardship issue, because I think it's the key issue in terms of support. No one wants to see the council go broke. And I think it's a realisation that the council did inherit this situation. However, in a time when we're in quite difficult economic conditions, it's not an easy time to be asking for a massive rise, is it?
It's not, but again, we need to. Perspective's important. It's not the ideal time, but when is it ever going to be the ideal time?
Oh yeah, I know.
That's number one. The other thing is, our hand has been forced. We could do what previous councils have done, stick our fingers in our ear, go la 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 la, and pretend nothing's wrong. But that's got us nowhere. We just need to be the grown-ups in the room.
And okay. IPART don't have a great reputation for granting large rate rises to under any special circumstances. What makes you think that they'll allow Armidale Council to be an exception? Particularly with this large.
Yeah, it is. Look, it is large. I think there's a few things. One is we're coming off a low base, so despite what people think, our rates are actually low compared to other comparable regions. So we're coming off a low base. A lot of councils will say they can grow their way out of it, but we have unique circumstances which indicate that we could. So we have the renewable energy zone is unique, and we also now have funding for which we'll talk about in a moment for more water, so we can grow, whereas others may not necessarily. We are being as diligent and thorough as we possibly can, and as transparent with the community as we can through the consultation period, so that can work in our favour. If you want to think about relativities, 50% is high, Tenterfield's going for 80%, Snowy's going for, I think, 100%. There's another couple of councils that are certainly between us and
100%. So we're not unique in this at the moment?
We're not. I think there's been, I don't know if it was a COVID thing, has meant that there's a bunch of councils have a lot of new councillors on who have just said, look, enough's enough. We need to do the right thing.
Yeah. Now, another release that came through late last week was the Oxy Solar Farm contribution. Could you tell us a bit about that? Because it seemed, I know we're all very interested in the renewable sector that's very much going to be impacting on not just us but adjoining councils as well, given that New England's been targeted as one of those areas that can host these and do it well. What is happening with this Oxley Solar Farm community benefit contribution system that's just recently been announced? Can you give it a bit of detail?
Yeah, I'll give you a bit of context first. So our renewable energy zone is slated as 8 gigawatts, which is the biggest in New South Wales, and I think to date is going to be the largest in Australia. Now, to produce 8 gigawatts of electricity, and that's what our transmission, so we're going to have a whole bunch of new transmission lines going through. That was originally slated as 8 gigawatts. They've now upped it to 10.2. So it really means that we are going to have not 8 gigawatts of electricity production. We'll need 16 gigawatts of electricity production, renewables production, to deliver to deliver the requisite amount of power. So I'm going to talk about the downsides first, and then we'll come back to the upsides.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is no doubt that there is significant downsides to the renewable energy zone that we have no say over.
Right.
Or very little. And I'm trying to be as loud as we possibly can.
Well, it's the time to do it, isn't it?
It is the time to do it.
Rather than in...
Yeah, so this is a state-significant development.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is that the state is funding the transmission, so we're going to have see new transmission lines go through here, and then private operators are teaming up with landholders to build renewables projects to plug into the new transmission lines. And it's going to fundamentally change the nature of our region, not just the Armidale region, but the entire New England. So I have heard from our group who've done the calcs, and, you know, it's this might be more directionally correct than factually correct, is going to be in the order of 2,200 wind towers in New England and 40 million solar panels. So it is going to be the biggest change that this region has seen since about 1840.
It surprises me that amount, but a couple of storage areas around here in Armidale, and one out in Bundara Road, I believe, it's unbelievable the amount of panels and stuff that are being stored there. It's huge.
It is huge. And it's going to get bigger. So
one
of our challenges is to get the renewables proponents to speak to us in a sensible way. Because they're not required to. So hats off to Oxley Solar for coming to us and, you know, talking to council about what can they do. I have had a meeting with the wind developer yesterday. I've had another meeting with the wind developer now. Now, many of them have, you know, this isn't their first renewables project, but what makes us different to previous projects they've done throughout Australia is in other areas, they've been the only renewables project. So they do look like a bit of a saviour to the region. They provide a bit of a cash income. They set up their own small community benefit fund.
Mm.
And, you know, every year they release some money and, you know, the playground gets a new softball thing. There'll be a bus shelter appear next year. The cricket team gets some sponsorships and kids' soccer team gets some sponsorship. But when they come here, we've got to take into account the cumulative impact. 2,200 wind towers, 40 million solar panels. So when they turn up, it's not just them. They're just part of everything else. Mm. So we're really encouraging people to enter into an agreement with council so we can actually meaningfully contribute back to the community. So that benefit that we've agreed with, it's on public exhibition, with Oxley Solar, there's an upfront cash component, then there's which is 50% of it, then it trails for 20 years adjusted for CPI. There's a few other things in there as well. Most importantly, we've asked them to fund 4 new EV charging stations. So that's this is a great outcome, and I'm working to get similar things with other energy proponents, and their level of enthusiasm ebbs and flows. But anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, no, because I know Urala Council has similar concerns too about in their area about we're going to be stuck with all the responsibility of servicing these, etc. But generally, once it's built, a lot of the servicing is not going to be adding greatly to the capacity within the council area. And the worry, of course, about what happens when it all becomes redundant.
Yes, that's true. In terms, so we will get an initial, well, they call it a sugar hit during the construction phase.
Yeah.
But that's going to, again, that comes with some downsides as well.
Yes,
we're in the midst of a housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I had an agent tell me there are 19 houses for rent in Armidale at the moment.
Mm.
So if we had a bunch of workers turn up, we have a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a skills shortage.
Yep.
Tradies are in short supply.
Of course, all these problems are already seen with the coal mining communities in the Hunter Valley.
That's right.
Having lived there, those very problems have always occurred there as well.
And so it's there are upsides, but there are downsides as well. So as a council, what we can do, and certainly what I see my role as mayor to do, is to minimise those downsides and try and navigate some upsides for us. It's something that's been foisted upon us, and we have to make the best of it. And I think this agreement with Oxley Solar is a great first start.
Yeah, certainly breaking a lot of new ground there, literally. Now, getting to the subject of water, which in 2019 was absolutely critical.
Yep.
Now we're in a situation where it's coming out of our ears, but we know, Australia being Australia, it's going to go back to critical water shortages are more the norm rather than what we're experiencing at the moment.
Yep.
What's been developing now? I believe we've heard about developments with the raising of the wall of Malpas Dam.
Yes.
And also the Puddledock pipeline.
What's happened there?
Yeah.
So the Puddledock pipeline, that was part of the funding package that came in when the Gyra pipeline was built. So, but the Gyra pipeline was deemed more urgent, which it was. So they built the Gyra pipeline first, but that funding was still in place. And it's a 50-50 funding agreement between council and the state government. So we each put in about $5.7 million to do it. So Puddledock provides 12 weeks' worth of water security. It's a secondary water source, but it just adds to the jigsaw puzzle of our water security.
Just to clarify, it really wasn't available in 2019.
No, the pumping and the pipeline was just not up to scratch.
Okay,
it wasn't online at best. It was probably something we could truck water out of.
Okay,
so this links Puddledock to the water treatment plant. You mentioned I probably spoke about this when I was on last. The $27 million that appeared in the state budget to raise Malpas Dam wall. So that's been secured. Our engineering team is working away with the Department of Public Works to scope that all out further and get things readied with an anticipated completion date by 2026.
Okay.
So now I'm really hopeful we don't have a drought between now and then because to build the wall, we actually have to drop the level of the water by 50%.
That's the case,
and that's...
doesn't bear thinking,
does it? So we really should have, as soon as the drought broke, this should have been the priority and it should have been funded, and we'd be filling a larger dam as we speak. There is a, certainly given our growth targets, our growth aspirations, there still will be a water shortage if we grow, which is why we need another secondary supply. And we have our eyes on Oakey River Dam, which is a disused hydro dam, but the state government's trying to sell it. We offered them $1. They haven't jumped at that yet. We're hopeful that, one side of the state government coffers can top up the other side and it becomes our asset. And then we're set.
So it's I suppose, watch this space then, but... quite a few developments have occurred over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Finally, there was a lot of publicity earlier on this week, at the end of last week, about Gyra seeking to demerge again. Part of the report I saw said that they claimed to have about three quarters of the signatures they require to present the demerger application or whatever it is to Parliament. What are your comments on that? I know, for instance, your Shire's had issues with Bundarra doing similar things. It seems to be a bit of a thing with some councils at the moment, but I know this has been going on for a while, but what are your observations about the development so far?
I like all of these things. Like, facts are important. And I'm a facts person. You need to take the emotion out. And when we say Gyra is seeking to demerge, I think the fact is, or the more accurate description is, there's a small and vocal group who are seeking to demerge. My read of the situation is that the bulk of the community is either happy or apathetic around it, but there's certainly a very noisy minority, and it'd be great if they actually applied facts. Their enthusiasm was certainly peaked when Gundagai and Cootamundra demerged, but the council was keen for that demerger to happen, and it was generally broken. Look, my comments on it, I'm not going to stand in the actively try and kibosh it, but I think it would be a real shame because facts are important, as I said, and the demerger forces at Gyra they're starting from a false premise. Their false premise is that Gyra was financially sustainable and in a really solid financial position, but the truth is Gyra wasn't. Gyra was financially unsustainable. It only managed to break even because it didn't spend money on maintaining its assets. Now, that doesn't make it unique. That's been pretty much every council.
Yeah.
So they had unrealistically low rates. They didn't renew any of their assets. And an example is there's a $4 million liability on their waste transfer station, the TIP at Gyra. That needs to be rehabilitated to the tune of $4 million. There's millions of other millions of others in projects that need spending. So the demerger forces, they tell a very selective and very fanciful story. So I'd encourage anyone who's putting their name down. And the other thing is it's pretty easy to put your signature to something. But, you know, there may very well be consequences. But I'd suggest that people go with fact, not emotion. And the fact is that Gyra was unsustainable. It had massive liabilities and it had no plan to climb its way out of it. So I can't imagine that the Gyra community is well served going back into that environment. The second thing is the proponents of this have never been in the arena. They've stood on the sideline. That's why they can be selective with their facts. And the other one is, are those people going to be the ones that are in the arena? If it does go ahead, will they actually be the ones that are responsible? I suspect not.
Okay. I suppose we'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see.
Anyway. Right, well, thanks very much again, Sam. It's been a pleasure having you in here this morning and updating us on quite significant developments within the Armidale Regional Council area. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon again.
Yeah, look forward to it. Okay. Thanks very much, Peter.
I've been speaking to Sam Copeland, Mayor of the Armidale Regional Council.
I've got